What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Mastery Podcast. This is a pretty special episode today, not only because I have a guest for you all, but in 48 hours I'm getting married. So I don't know whether today is appropriate. I think as a groom I should potentially be taking a bit of time out. And when I spoke to my guest a couple of minutes ago and said, "Oh, it's my wedding in 48 hours," he was like, "Ah." And I probably got from that R, it was like, maybe you should be doing more for your wedding. But having said that, I'm sat in my living room right now at the table, and I've got about 20 bags in front of me that are all labeled up for table 1 to 2 to 3 with all the stuff. And I will be going to the venue very, very shortly. But I wanted to do today's podcast. As you guys know, my passion is helping you guys and delivering not only content myself, but more importantly, recently bringing on guests who have stood the test of time and have not only stood the test of time, but built an incredibly successful business so that you can learn from everybody out there. And especially today, you're going to be learning and listening to somebody that I have a lot of respect for, somebody that has built a incredible empire within the fitness space, specifically supporting and helping personal trainers. Today, episode number 64, I'd like to welcome John Goodman onto the Mastery Podcast. John, good afternoon and good morning to you, should I say.
Good afternoon, Mark. I am honored that I'm going to put a bit of a fissure in your relationship before it even starts, that I'm the one who does that. Since we're talking about longevity, I feel like it's appropriate.
Listen, guys, John has not only been in the industry since 2005 and was coaching from 2005, but he's actually owns the largest blog for personal trainers. He has created the online coaching certification and written 7 books and has recently launched the marketing newsletter worldwide. So safe to say, this guy has done a hell of a lot for the fitness industry, continues to do a lot for the fitness industry. And we both share a passion for helping personal trainers to get better, create a more fulfilling career, and create a better life out of what we love so much. And John, thank you for being with me today. I'm sure, you know, I'm not the first to tell you that what you've accomplished is incredible. But for everybody that's listening to the podcast today, could you give us an overview of kind of like what got you started into the fitness industry? I mean, you've created a hell of a lot, but, you know, a lot of trainers are going to be listening to this and thinking, you know, okay, this is a guy that's got all this, it's success. It's another guy that's got success. You and I talk about backstories. What's John Goodman's backstory?
Yeah, Mark, it's funny when you talk about it, man, because hindsight's always 20/20. Like, humans are not rational or irrational beings, we're post-rationalizing beings. It's so interesting to look back on my story, and I'll tell you about it in a little bit, and realize that, okay, it sounds really nice the way that I'm going to tell it, but the reality is I'm post-rationalizing, I'm creating the narrative after it happened. You know, going through it, I had no idea what I was doing. Looking back, I realized things that I was good at along the way and doubled down on them. And I think that's probably the biggest lesson. I think that one of the biggest problems these days is that trainers try to do too much. And it doesn't, you know, you can make a go basically with any marketing method. The only way that you're going to fail is if you try to do it all. And so intuitively, I kind of knew that. You know, I've never really done audio. I mean, even podcast appearances, I basically just do a bunch of podcasts within a month time, and then I don't do any for 6 months. I don't have any video. You know, everything that I do is publishing and writing, and I've doubled down on that. And people would call me crazy for that. It's like, you're doing analog, you're putting stuff in print and shipping it around the world? Like, what the heck? Like, it's video these days, man. And so that's like the biggest lesson that's come from my whole story is figure out what you're great at and double down on it and get amazing at it and keep getting better and better and better and better and better at it, and you'll find your place. You know, I started in the fitness industry for the same reason that a lot of people do. I wanted to get girls. Like, I was 15 years old. You know, I went to the gym. I was 105 pounds soaking wet. I went to the gym and I wanted to lift weights to get girls because I thought that girls like big arms. And I remember distinctly at the YMCA at home in Toronto, in Canada, where I'm from, and I was in the weight rack. There were basically two weight racks. One of them with dumbbells that went up to 15 pounds, and the other one with the dumbbells that started at 20. And I distinctly remember dreaming of the day when I could lift weights with the big boys starting at 20 pounds, which is insane looking back on it, right? And so, you know, I lifted weights all through high school. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a doctor because I grew up in a reasonably affluent Jewish community, and every young affluent Jewish boy wants to be a doctor. And so I went to school. I ended up going to university for exercise science, for kinesiology. It was just a science undergrad again to go to medicine, and loved it. Got a job as a personal trainer at the university gym in second year, which was a blessing because not only did I get 20 to 25 hours in the gym, like training people, but also monitoring the gym. In addition to my workouts, I was studying exercise science full time, physiology, biomechanics, etc. So I was like all day, morning to night, engulfed in this. In addition, I would close the gym, and there were all of, at this point it was only guys, but there were all of the guys doing their PhDs in exercise, nutrition, and muscle physiology. And at that point, the University of Western Ontario was doing a lot of leading research in things like creatine supplementation, caffeine as an ergogenic aid. I mean, all of the leading research at that point was actually happening at that university. So all of these guys who were doing all of this research, I would keep the gym open for them past midnight, and they would just sit and talk, and I would be able to listen. And then as the years went on, I would be able to take part in the conversation, because every time they mentioned a study or something like that, I'd go home and read it. Like, that was the biggest benefit that I ever had back then. Anyway, graduated university, decided to be a personal trainer for a couple years before I went back to school, got a job full-time training. By the time I was 23 years old, I mean, I kind of reached the top that a lot of people could reach as a personal trainer. I was making as much as you could charge in Toronto at the time. I had a full book of clients. I was earning a commission for referring my overload of clients to other trainers. And I was even earning a bit of a salary, because at that point now I was hiring and actually training and onboarding other trainers for the club that we were at. Mm-hmm. And I reached this point at 23 years old where I was like, yeah, cool, things are good, but like, is this what my life was going to be like? And that's the line that kept repeating in my head, and I didn't like the answer. So like a lot of trainers, I looked for a solution. And I didn't know what that solution was. Like, this is 2008. Entrepreneurship wasn't cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know what – there were people doing work on the internet for sure, but like, I didn't know about it. Like, I started my first website not knowing what a blog was. I started a blog, but I didn't know the word blog. It wasn't like this stuff was all in your face. And I mean, I was just searching. I built two business plans for smoothie operations. I studied residential real estate investing for 6 months. And eventually I came across this term called called infopreneuring in a book called Multiple Streams of Income by somebody named Robert G. Allen. And I mean, the book itself is fine. Like, it's probably pretty outdated now. I still have it. I still go back to it. But in this book, there was this image in this section about infopreneuring, and I'll never forget this image. It was basically like a circle that sort of denoted the universe, and all around this universe were all of the income streams that you could generate with infopreneuring, and right in the middle, denoting the center of the universe, was a book. And so I was like, oh, I'll write a book. How hard could that be? Because I was so ignorant in what it actually took to write a book and why I shouldn't have written a book to educate my industry at 24 years old. I actually did it. You know, there was so much of that optimistic ignorance. And you know, it was difficult. But about a year and a half later, I came out with my first book called Ignite the Fire. To promote the book, I was like, I need a website to promote the book. So I created Personal Trainer Development Center. And the rest is kind of history. You know, I realized the PTDC needs to be collaborative. I needed to support other people and publish other people. And the PTDC has grown into the largest website in the world for trainers. That Ignite the Fire, I mean, still is not only a six-figure income stream for me every year, but is translated to a few languages now, is used in certifications in India, to colleges in North America, to mentorships in Norway, and everything in between. And man, I was so ignorant in why I shouldn't do it. That I went ahead and did it. And I feel like a lot of the problem these days is we know too much about things that we become so pessimistic about them and we don't do them.
Yeah, of course.
And that's what kind of drove me. And then from there, I mean, yeah, I was training 40 hours a week, trimmed down to 25 to kind of continue to grow the website, went down to 15 to continue to grow the website, and then eventually stepped away altogether to focus fully on the online stuff. But it was a slow progression. Like, I'm glossing over years here.
And I think I see one of the big things nowadays, and that ignorance that you had at the time, because there was so little social media around, there's so many distractions. It's like, I think I should write a book. There's no reason to go on social media to look at challenges, to look at what everybody's doing, to get stressed out because is it going to be as good as everybody else's? It's like, I don't know what else is out there. I don't know what's good or bad. I tell you what. But, you know, it's interesting because I think on a day-to-day basis, and I don't know what your opinion is on this, you know, we have a lot of people not doing anything because before they decide to do anything, they compare themselves to other people and think they'll never be good enough. Mm-hmm. And so they get to the point where they just don't do anything. And then there's a lot of people that have a great gift to the world to do something and are just like, no, I just don't know whether I'm going to be able to do it. I don't know what's involved, or I think there's too much involved. And like you going back to that you know, ignorance that you had, it was a blessing, right?
Oh, it was. I mean, the reality of it is you're probably not that good yet. And that's fine. Like, that's good. Like, nobody's good when they start. It's just you're comparing yourself to people who you see out there now. The only reason that you see them out there now is because they've already gone through all those stages where they weren't good at what they did. Like this original book, Ignite the Fire, is in version 2. If you have a copy of version 1, you'll realize that it was not very good, but it was good enough at the time. Mm-hmm. And then when I got better, when I could invest more into editing, when I could invest more into design, and when I met a lot more people, you know, through my website, the Personal Trainer Development Center, I met so many people and I gained so much more of a global insight into what people need that I was able to improve the book quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what you see now is version 2.
Yeah.
And the best advice that I ever got, I mean, this is for writing a book, but I think it's great advice overall, was from somebody who I met reasonably early on in that journey. I mean, I was traveling the world going to like every single event. There was one summer I went to New York 8 times. I just went to every single event I could possibly go to just to shake hands and meet people. And I remember this advice that somebody gave me. He goes, you know what, it's really great, but never forget, there's a reason that people invented version 2.0s.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that. And I, you know, that's not just for a book. That's for anything you do. I mean, even as a trainer, like, you program workouts. The workouts that you programmed 6 months ago were terrible compared to what you do.
And do you know what's interesting about that? I remember, like, I mean, you've traveled and studied a lot, right? And I know coaches. I spent a lot of time traveling the world, John. You know, I was in America, Sweden, a lot of UK, a lot of different places in Europe, Canada. And I spent a lot of time over there. I spent thousands and tens of thousands traveling the world. And you've done the same. I mean, obviously, America's got a lot of education. Canada's got a lot of education available for coaches. I don't know what the shift has been, but I see a lot of people not going anywhere.
Right.
You know, and now don't get me wrong. You know, we've all got online resources for coaches to learn from. What value did you see specifically from getting out there and actually interacting with people? How did that help you?
This is actually a question I don't think anybody's ever asked me this. It's a very interesting question, Mark, because, you know, at the time, if there was online stuff, I didn't really know about it. There certainly weren't online education learning modules the same way that there are now.
Yep.
So but at the time, I mean, it was just driven by interest. Like, I started to become engaged. I started to realize that there were just so many interesting people out there who were doing great work in their own neighborhoods, and they were starting to put on seminars.
Yeah.
I mean, this was kind of the beginning of people putting on their own seminars, not just certification companies and stuff doing it. And I went to some of those too, and I went to some of the Perform Better stuff for sure, which were all great. But I realized just how open and welcoming people were when you shook their hand,
yeah,
and how difficult it was to get to know somebody when you couldn't.
Yeah.
And if you could just shake somebody's hand once, or get an introduction to somebody, it was a much easier time getting to know them.
Yeah.
And that takes time. I mean, Mark, you and I have known of each other for many years.
Of course.
We just connected for the first time ever 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the second time we've ever spoken. And I could have gotten an introduction to you earlier.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you how it came about. I had somebody working for me at one point in the UK, because I realized that I made a lot more money selling books in the UK than I did in North America because of the British pound. So I hired somebody in the UK to basically call every gym and try to sell my books to them. And long story short, our mutual buddy, Jamie Alderton, was on London Wheel with Brian Rose, who's also a friend of mine, and was talking about my book. He didn't say the name, but he was like, oh, I read this book for Personal Trainers. It was really great. It talked about this. And I didn't see it, but this guy who was working for me knew Jamie, knew that Jamie was a big deal and a great guy, and was basically like, yo, this guy mentioned your book. You should reach out. So I reached out to Jamie. Our other mutual friend, Chris Burgess, brought me out to London to do a seminar.
Yep.
So I did a day seminar out there, had a was able to meet up with Jamie at night, you know, spent a night, obviously got some drinks with him because that's what he does. And from there, I mean, Jamie was able to introduce me to Phil. Phil and I built a relationship over like really 2 years. And then finally I was like, hey, Phil, like, I'm not going to be over in the UK for a while. Just introduce me to Mark. You know, I want to get to know the guy, but man, I've known of you and respected you and wanted to get to know you for years. And I didn't push
same here, man.
That,
same
like,
here.
Yeah. And I didn't like you just kind of, I think that's the important part is when you meet somebody in person, it opens up so many doors down the road, as long as you don't go out of your way to be like, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. Like, I've kind of always believed that, you go out of your way to meet people when you get a chance and truly meet them and get to know them and try to add value to them however you can. And then you wait for opportunities to escalate those relationships, mm-hmm. to take care of those people. And you don't push it. You try to create this thing where you put out so much good work into the world that your reputation precedes you. So when you reach out to somebody, they're like, oh my God, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, this is great. I can't wait. I've been looking forward to meeting you versus, oh, who's this person that's reaching out to me? No matter how good you are.
Yeah, of course, of course. No, that makes a lot of sense. And do you know what? I will just say from my perspective that whilst, you know, I mean, I've studied a lot of online courses and will continue to invest in different courses. And you and I talked about, you know, the value in everybody that's providing education for people online. I personally think that actually getting out and meeting people, whether it's for a half-day seminar, whether it's jumping on. I mean, I remember going to listen to an ISSN conference, which was one day in Tampa, just to meet Ben Pakulski.
Right.
And I flew over, spent $2,500, and flew back.
Yep.
And 3.5 years later, he became a great friend. We became very well connected. I got to know Vince. I got to know different people. And a $2,500 flight would have actually made me tenfold in terms of connections and introductions and opportunities. No, exactly, right? But but it's just a point that kind of, you know, you mentioned it, you know, the fact that you traveled a lot, met a lot of different people, and I just think it's a little bit of an you know, a lot of people hide away from doing that, and I think it's something that's of high value to people. And in line with that kind of high value, you know, you have come through an incredible pace and developed a lot of products and solutions to help the personal training world. In terms of who John Goodman is, and in terms of I talk about personal growth and personal development, what have you implemented in yourself and your, not say productivity, but in terms of your ability to progress and develop as a in a day-to-day basis, or in terms of your mind and kind of how you work, what's changed, and are there any kind of strategies that you use on a week-to-week, day-to-day basis, even going back 4, 5, 6, 7 years, that you've implemented that are very instrumental in your growth and development?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that'd be probably more useful than what I do now, because what I do now, I mean, I'm at the point where I'm fortunate. I have about a dozen of the most incredible people ever working for me, to the point where I can focus just about solely on things like this and writing and producing materials.
Yep.
With a world-class editorial and design team, with all the operations taken care of, with all the day-to-day taken care of. So what I do now is kind of irrelevant.
Yep. Of course.
I think to a lot of people. When you get to that point, it's sensational. What I did back then, Mark, was really interesting. I realized a couple years into my training career that the only way to really progress, and this is common knowledge now, but again, if you go back to like 2007, 2008, it wasn't that common. I mean, you would have a hard time finding a talk about business or marketing at a fitness conference.
Of course, very much so, very much so.
And so I realized, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to need to get good at marketing and business. Like, I don't know why I thought that, But I realized that pretty early on. I'm like, I never knew anything. I almost failed the only business class I ever took in high school. I never took any business or marketing classes in university. And so I picked up my brother's, the first ever marketing book that I read was my brother's first year marketing textbook that I picked up off of the shelf in my parents' basement and read it cover to cover. That was the first, like, it was there. So I just read it. And then I was like, okay, I gotta know more of this stuff. So I went to the bookstore, it was called Chapters around here, but like I went to the big bookstore and looked at all of the best-selling marketing and business books, literally wrote them down on a piece of paper, went across the street to the library, checked out as many of those books that I could, or if I couldn't find those books, like other books by the same author,
yep.
And checked those out. And then in the back of books, or often in those books, it would say, oh, here's other stuff that I recommend you read, or they would mention other books. And I just kept a list. And I just went to the library and checked them out.
Yeah.
And you know, at any one point in time, I kind of created the 50-50 rule that I want to be reading one fitness book and one marketing and one business book.
Brilliant tip.
And it was an hour of reading a day, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
That I did for years as I was building up my personal training, and man, my business grew quick and I started to leapfrog people that I was working with that were many years my senior. I mean, like I said, at 23 years old. Mark, I was put in charge as senior trainer at the club that I was at, 10,000 square foot flagship location in the most expensive postal code in Canada. We opened up this gym, and I was in charge of the trainers there, and I was the youngest trainer by at least 5 years. And it wasn't that I was better at fitness at all, not even close. It was this practice of I just kind of, and nobody really knew that I was doing it. But I had just gained that knowledge, and I'd continued to do it. And I started to see myself kind of leapfrog colleagues in earning potential and reach and clientele. And it's always been that way. I mean, now I'm obsessed with marketing and business, and that's where my career has gone. But at the time, I mean, that was it.
So let's take a trainer that's within their first couple of years. And you and I both speak to trainers and know of trainers that are really struggling. John Goodman was full. John Goodman had a waiting list. John Goodman had referrals coming in, right? I had the same, right? I was flat out, right? And there is something that you, I'm sure, have acknowledged over the years that if you could give someone who's relatively new to the fitness industry your piece of advice, 50-50, read a book every single day. You know, with reading a book comes applying that information.
Well, sure.
But what made John Goodman the busiest trainer? What's the secret for you?
I think what made me the busiest trainer going back. And again, this is me post-rationalizing. Like, there was no master plan here. Like, don't ever think that I knew that I was doing. I knew what I was doing all the way along. Like, I definitely found out that I was interested in this stuff.
Yeah.
Which is probably why I kept doing it. But looking back, I had figured out, I had acquired a basic competence in all of the major important transferable skills needed to run any business. You're talking behavioral psychology.
Great.
I mean, how to make people like you.
Yeah.
How to make people want to do something. You know, not how to get people to do something, how to make people want to do something.
It's completely very different. Very different. Yep.
And how to market, how to write. I mean, even if you're not copywriting, even if you're not writing advertising, I think that that's an incredibly important transferable skill too, but just writing emails to your clients.
Yeah.
If you can write, you can write better emails. You know, you can communicate better. And so I had acquired all of these basic skills, not really knowing it. And I had also made myself a lot more interesting, which if I really think about it and I look at those key relationships that I made with my clients that started to refer me other people, it had very little to do with the results that I got them, or even in some cases, the results that I didn't get them. Mm. Or my training knowledge, it had to do with the fact that I had become more interesting to speak to. I mean, people who can afford training, people who are respected in the neighborhood, you know, the neighborhood mavens, are generally highly intelligent, forward-thinking people. you need to be able to talk to them about things that they're interested in. I mean, I would get a newspaper subscription and read all the headlines every single morning before I'd go and train my clients.
That's
simply so that I could talk to them and be like, oh, did you see this? And then the second you mention that, they talk to you about it.
Yes, of course.
But just to be interesting to these people, to be able to speak to the professor of medicine about, you know, his students, to be able to speak to the minister, I'm talking about actual people, to be able to speak to the minister about how they're doing such a good job raising money for their church. Like, this is what makes or breaks a trainer. We're actually running an article, I think it's 2 or 3 months out, Mark, in Fitness Marketing Monthly, in this newsletter, about the uncanny relationship between highly successful people in the fitness industry and going out of their way to study stand-up comedy and improv.
Interesting.
Because once you get to a certain level of skill, how do you make yourself more engaging to the client? How do you set yourself apart? You become more fun to be around.
Of course.
And that's a skill.
And that's adding value in the same time. People want to keep coming back to something like that, right?
Well, of course. And people want to show off that they know. Like if you make people feel good about themselves, they want to show off to other people that they're associated with you.
Of course.
Nobody wants to work with an empty trainer.
Yes.
So if you make it look like, even if you're not training anybody in the gym, even if you're not busy, if you're the most popular person in that gym, everybody wants to be around you.
Exactly.
That's just human social dynamics.
Yeah, yeah.
And so by becoming the most popular person in the gym, the most talkative, slapping hands, walking around the floor, chatting with people, laughing with people, you're noticed, and then everybody wants to work with you.
Everybody wants to hang out with you. Everybody wants to say hello to you when they come in the gym because you're making their day. And I think
and tell other people about you and bring other people in to get to know you at the same time because of how good they feel like you make them look.
And do you know what's funny about that? Is there are a lot of trainers that I've noticed, the more educated they become, the more serious they become.
Right.
And it's very interesting with today's, not overload of information, trainers become very, very educated. But because you become more educated, don't lose the personality that you are when you're with, like,
yeah, right.
You know, it's like, okay, I'm going in a gym, I'm now going to be a clinical practitioner. And it's like, no, you're a personal trainer. Like, people want to be around you, like you, spend time with you. And if you've got knowledge, then great. But at the same time, you know, don't lose that personal touch.
Well, what's the difference between, you know, there's an information hierarchy, right?
Yep.
There's information, there's data, information, knowledge, wisdom, and insight. Data is just all of the bits and pieces of information on the planet disorganized. Information is, you know, somewhat organized for you, but still way too much than you'd ever be able to know. Knowledge is where a lot of trainers sit, where knowledge is somebody who has taken that information and kind of made sense of it a little bit, but don't really know how to apply it yet. They're just kind of spitting it out. Most people who educate trainers, unfortunately, are knowledgeable, but they don't particularly have a lot of wisdom or insight.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like, hey, here's all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's wisdom, which are the really good educators are wisdom, contain a lot of wisdom. They're able to take that knowledge and they're able to say, okay, here is this knowledge. Here's how you apply it for your situation with the very nuanced sort of application steps,
yep.
Which is a lot of what you're talking about. And then there's insight. Nobody can really teach you insight. Insight is taking wisdom and knowing how to apply it specifically to your situation.
Yep.
And so a fantastic trainer has the knowledge, knows to learn from people who can help them accumulate that wisdom, you know, all of the training protocols, but has the insight to know when and how to apply them or not apply them. And to know that, you know what, for a lot of clients, doesn't matter. Like, for most clients, all that matters is that they work hard and they're consistent. The specifics of what they do are so secondary to those things.
Mm-hmm.
And too much pressure on them to do the quote-unquote right thing could actually stall progress.
Of course.
But that's insight. And that's just that next level. And I think you and I both know a lot of just incredible people. You know, you mentioned Ben. You know, Dane McDonald is another one in Australia. Like, just absolutely sensational trainers out there who have kind of evolved through that hierarchy, right? And they woo that trainer for a while that was like, no, you have to do it like this. You've got to do a 4-second eccentric and then a pause. And then you've got to, you know, mind muscle connection, squeeze all the way up and corkscrew your shoulders and stuff. And it's like, and then they evolve to the point where they're like, okay, here's what matters out of all of that. And here's what doesn't.
Yeah, of course.
You know, if you're training to be on stage, it's very different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Obviously. But most of the people that we train and most of the people that pay us are people who just want to look good and feel good.
Yeah.
And
it's having that ability to balance that knowledge.
Yeah.
And use it at the most applicable time, you know, but not forget that the very reason why people stay with you is who you are and how you make them feel, you know, which is something which is so great for everybody listening to the podcast to hear from you. Because I know a lot of people listening to the podcast will know you, know of your work, but maybe have not heard a lot of you. And guys, you know, there are people like John and myself who have been in the industry a little bit longer. And the interesting thing is, in the early days, we've all had that knowledge where you literally go crazy with your knowledge. And then it's the years down the line where you come back and you go, wow, you know, it's almost stupid. comes back around and going like the depth of knowledge I was giving people versus what that person actually needs. And that ultimately is the wisdom. It's just time, right? It's the experience.
Man, I was block periodizing for accountants, like.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
You know, it's just so silly. It just made no sense.
No.
Like, oh, by the way, tax season is coming up. I'm like, oh, but the mesocycle. You know?
No, exactly. And I would never forget that. And like, next week we're going to work on your 1RM, right? And I was like, what? Like, I never forget that. Now, we've kind of touched on kind of trainers that are kind of relatively new to the industry, but I have a lot of people listening to the podcast that are at that stage where you and I got to, where they've developed a great business, they're full, they're doing really, really well, and good on them. And I honestly have gone from being full, being in high demand, to growing an online business and then growing an online business and then pulling back from that and creating different businesses. But what's your biggest advice to a trainer that's full, that's got a waiting list, that's at that max point, that's ready to go online? What do they do? What are the big key things from John that you would give them to do? Take-homes.
Yeah, I think a lot of trainers, I mean, look, we have hundreds of thousands of data points. I've done hundreds of phone calls, tons of surveys with our audience, and we were able to figure out, basically define the problem with personal training, with a conventional career in the fitness industry, down to one sentence, which is at some point in every trainer's career, they need to figure out how to make more in a bit less time with a bit better schedule.
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of it. And so online training is a great first step for that. It's not for everybody, but it's for a lot of people. It's a great first step. But in order to get there, in order to kind of take that leap, to jump over that gap, it's important to define the problem. And I think that's the step that a lot of people miss. They're like, oh, I want to do this internet thing. What's the best software? What's the best social media to use? It's like, nah, those are distribution channels. Those are tools. You have no idea what to use. You're not even asking the right questions yet. The right question is, what's the problem I'm trying to solve? The problem you're trying to solve is how do I carve out the time and the mental space to be able to figure out what I actually want to do?
Yeah.
You know, how many clients I want to work with. And in order to do that, you need to take it one step further back with that definition and say, how much money do I need to be able to make? We call this the freedom number, and in a lot of my materials, how much money do you need to make each month?
Yeah.
To make sure that you're taken care of, to make sure that the people you love are taken care of. And that number will vary depending on who you are. But it's generally, you know, your rent, food, if you have any debt, obviously your debt, if you have dependables, you know, taking care of people, and then if you have hobbies or things like that you can't live without, like add that in. Whatever it is, create a realistic number for you. You know, when I was a single guy living in Toronto, it was $2,600 a month. And now I've got a baby and a wife, like, it's a lot more than that, $6,500. So whatever it is, figure out what that number is. Then you take a look at your training. And you say, okay, am I making that amount yet or not? If you are making that amount yet and you do want to take that next step, well, the important thing is to say, how can I condense my schedule? Basically, kick out the clients I don't like. Basically, condense my schedule down into blocks as much as I possibly can with the clients that I want to work with. Make that amount of money. Because you know that once you make that amount of money, now that you've defined that that's the amount of money you need, you now have the freedom. And I've always said that freedom is providing yourself the opportunity to fail. Now you know that you're taken care of. And when that happens, your brain does a really interesting thing. It frees up space. Mm-hmm. You're now not worrying about the unknown because you've made the unknown known. Fear is an action. The only reason why we fear is because we don't know. Right? If you wish to stave off all fear, imagine that the worst that can happen most possibly will happen. Mm-hmm. If you make the unknown known, you don't fear. Fear is simply an irrational response to the unknown. Mm-hmm. So once you figure out how much money you have, you don't have fear anymore. Right? You know that you're making enough each month. It might not be as much as you want to make ultimately. Mm-hmm. But if you want to take that next step, you're always going to have to take one step backwards in order to take two steps forward.
Yeah.
The way to do that is to find it, figure out how much money you need, figure out when you're making that money, carve out the time in your schedule away from that, and then start using that time for personal development. Maybe that's reading more on business or marketing. Maybe that's listening more to podcasts. Maybe that's more just starting to produce work and putting it out in the world. Not caring if you're making money with it, understanding that the process is becoming good at that new type of work.
Yep.
Just like you become good at training. And if you're not making that amount of money yet, then again, you know that the problem is you need to make this amount of money. Who cares about anything else?
Yep.
Right? But now, that is your only job. So if you know that you've got 20 clients and you need 23 clients to make that amount of money, your only job right now is to get three more clients. That's it. Everything else can get ignored for the time being, which is a really comforting place to be in. Because once – I think a lot of trainers, once they really define it, they realize that you don't need that many customers to be a very successful personal trainer. Like 25, 30, maybe even less than that. It ain't that many customers.
No, of course.
And so to acquire those customers, you don't need big social networks. You don't need to care about Facebook ads or the algorithm or any of that crap. You need to talk to real people and shake people's hands. You need to reach out to people who you knew at some point and wish them well and take an interest in them. You need to walk around the gym floor more and shake more hands and laugh with more people. Mm-hmm. Like, that's your job. Your job isn't to figure out some pithy social media post to get likes.
Yeah.
Maybe that comes later when you're trying to build a platform. But that ain't your job right now. So I think, Mark, to answer your question, like, it's that definition. It's that freedom number. Mm-hmm. That's the first step. And then from there, you can go in any one of the direction that you want to go in. And you may not even know what that is yet. And that's fine. But unless you free up that space and that mental space, you know, both time and mental space, in order to figure that out, you're never going to get there.
Mm-hmm. And did you know, I find the kind of financial aspect of growing your business, it's like a lot of trainers want the next step, but as you said, like, what do you need? Because what they actually need versus what they're actually stressing over building is a lot less. Right. So let's say, like you said, they want to go from $3,000 to $4,000. If the reality is that it's a grand increase, then where is that to be found? Rather than having no figure, no finances, no structure, and going, right, now I need to grow a big business. It's like, break it down into what's actually necessary to take you to the next step.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why we kind of selected, I mean, this is back in 2013, but that's why my team and I selected online training as the next big thing.
Yeah.
Before it became so in vogue.
Yeah.
Is because we realized it's like, okay, well, like you said, $3,000 to $4,000. Okay, well, you need five people paying you $200 a month.
Yep.
You need two people paying you $500 a month. You need four people paying you $250, whatever you're charging. But, like, if you can do that on your own schedule, the job, in order to get to that freedom number before you get into the passive income streams, before you get into the multiple income streams, because all that stuff takes time to build up and takes upfront effort where you're probably going to get no result for a period of time.
Yep.
You know, for further gain, which is great when it happens, mm-hmm. but it's going to take some time to get there. What matters is that you focus on the highest yield efforts, as long as it's under your control, to get to that point.
Yeah.
Online training to me is the highest yield effort because you can charge a fair amount each month and you can do it entirely on your own schedule.
Yeah.
Which means you can do it at nights, you can do it on weekends, you can do it when your kid's sleeping or whatever, right? And you're going to make a lot of money per client, which means you don't need that many clients.
Yeah.
So I'm completely honest. I mean, look, I literally wrote the textbook on online training. We created the first ever certification for it. We've helped more trainers transition to online training than anybody else put together. Mm-hmm. And I'll still honestly tell you that the majority of people who do online training will not be online trainers for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
It's a stepping stone.
And why is that?
And it's the best stepping stone that I that I've ever found.
And why do you think that people struggle to make a success out of online coaching?
Because they don't know what to do, because they don't realize that it's a new business model.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's a very, very valuable point, is that when you are running a lot of people, and I don't know what your views are on this, but a lot of people are naive to business. When you're a personal trainer, if you're a good communicator with people, you can generally fill a diary up and not really realize how you did it. Right,
yeah. And you don't have to be good. You don't have location advantage. You have location bias.
Exactly, and then you have a gym with 5,000-6,000 members. You're going to be full. People want exercise. They pay you. You want to go online. You suddenly actually need to run a business then, and you need to understand your marketing and your content, and it's growing a business. That's actually growing a business, and that's what they struggle with, because the whole reality of needing to know business to grow a business.
We're starting to run some ads right now. Actually, they're starting today. And it'll be interesting for you to see. I'll send you it if you don't see them. I'm sure we're going to target you, Mark. But even if we don't, I'll send you it. But it's talking about exactly that. It's saying, hey, what is it that's made us more successful helping trainers transition to online training than anybody else over a long period of time? And it's because we didn't focus on things like Facebook ads. I mean, Facebook ads, for one, it's just one example, but ad spend has gone up 3 times since January.
Of course.
And it's continuing to go up. So acquiring a customer is 3 times more expensive. Acquiring a lead is 3 times more expensive than it ever was. And it's continuing to go up. The simple principle, the trick, whatever you want to call it, is curating diffusion, is understanding that you don't, if you're online, you don't market yourself based off of the 99% that makes you the same as everybody else. You know, you burn fat, you train new moms, you help busy dads, whatever. You don't market that. Everybody markets that. Who cares?
Yeah.
What you do is you market the 1% that makes you different than most people, but is an uncommon commonality to a certain group of people, even if it's reasonably small.
Mm-hmm.
You figure out where those people already exist, are already hanging out, and you diffuse into those communities and make yourself the expert within those communities. That's how you become the obvious choice online. And then from there, once you do that, then you might start bursting at the seams. It's not saying that you can only take people on like that, but then you start bursting at the seams. That gives you the opportunity, like what happens in a gym, where once you get the opportunity to work with a baseline of people and get them results, then they start referring you other people. People start saying, hey, how do you look so good? How do you feel so good?
And then it's like a snowball.
Go to this person. Yeah, and then it just happens, right?
Happens. Yeah, of course, of course.
But you got to give yourself that opportunity. You don't have the location bias like you do in a gym that makes that easy.
Yeah. And that again, for trainers, is a skill they've got to learn. It's a skill they've got to develop. And you know, it takes time. Now, John, you and I today could spend 2 hours.
Both have gray in our beard. Go on.
2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, talking to trainers, helping trainers, sharing our passion, something you do every single day with everything that you have. However, I have got to get to the venue. I have got to get to the venue. I will get absolutely shot. I have absolutely loved our time talking to each other. The knowledge bombs, the experience that John shared, please go back over the podcast, listen to it. I guarantee you won't have taken notes. I guarantee you would have missed some bits. Go over it, listen to it again. And if you don't know about John, I'm going to give you an opportunity now to find out how to get in touch with him, find out how to get involved with his programs. You know, we talk about this at length when we talk about, you know, everybody does everybody else's work. Everybody learns from everybody else. I've studied everybody else's material over the world, and it's important for us to learn from each other. So, John, I'd like you to just tell everybody listening to the podcast, if you may, how does everybody get in touch with you? I know we're going to put links in the bio, links to the website, everything for everybody, but just while they're listening to the podcast, some won't click links, some will want to know now. How do people reach out to you? Get in touch.
Yeah, Personal Trainer Development Center is the big blog.
Yep.
So we've got over 800 professionally edited articles on there. We've been doing it for many, many years. I mean, if you search Personal Trainer Development Center, you'll find it. There'll be a link. If you are interested in online training specifically, you can go to onlinetrainer.com. I spent way too much money on that domain, so please go there. onlinetrainer.com. And I mean, from there, you can find out anything about me. The Online Trainer Academy is the certification. We're opening up enrollment this year in September for the first time this year. So those are the best parts. And then beyond that, I mean, we've got Facebook groups. We've got all that stuff. But you can find everything else we do from there.
Well, listen, guys, you are going to be opened up to a whole new world if you connect with John's material. You know, both of us are extremely passionate and love spending time helping you guys. And at the end of the day, you know, we've both been in the industry a good amount of time. And one of the most important things to me is that I bring people onto the podcast that are real. People that have actually been in the trenches. You are, nine times out of ten with social media now, you're seeing people with tens, twenties, thirties, plus thousand followers and thinking, oh my God, they've just got there and it's just happened to them. No, John is somebody else who's living proof that, you know, he's worked his ass off. He's gone through the being full in the diary. He's gone through building an online business. He's now developing all these multiple income streams. But he's done the foundations. He's done them very, very well. And these are some of the things that a lot of trainers try and jump hoops with. So I just want to, John, thank you for not only connecting with me recently, it's opened up a new relationship for me and one which has been waiting a long time to happen. And I know this is going to be the first of many conversations. And when I'm traveling, we'll be connecting and seeing each other. And I hope a friendship that will develop from here. But on behalf of everybody listening to the Mastery Podcast, thank you for your time. I know it's early in the morning, and I know you've got a lot to do and a busy day ahead. So thank you, John. I appreciate your time.
You got a lot more to do than I do, man.
Take care. I really appreciate it. And guys, don't forget to hook up and reach out to John. John, thank you for your time.
You bet, Mark. Thanks, man.